you broken your resolutions yet? Welcome back to the Blood Red Pencil podcast with your host, Elkhart Anil. We would like to wish all our readers and listeners a very happy new year and a successful and prosperous 2023. This year is the 15th anniversary of the Blood Red Pencil blog, if you can believe it. In August 2008, I joined my friend Danny Greer and a handful of other author editors in Danny's new venture to pool our collective knowledge about everything writing and editing. Marianne Miller came on board in October of that year, and the three of us have formed the backbone of this blog ever since. We've overseen the production of more than 2,500 posts by 48 different members of our blog and many, many guest bloggers. And we've moderated 31,000 comments from our awesome community of readers. So we think this is something worth celebrating, and we hope you'll join us in August as we dust off the party hats and streamers and put on a vinyl record or two. Joking, we do know how to work a tape deck. Anyway, moving on swiftly to today's episode. New Year's resolutions, no matter how well intended, are made to be broken. Why so? Could it be that they are created on a whim and aren't backed by the commitment that turns spoken words into physical or mental action? When Linda Lane moved into a smaller place, she spent days going through old files and eliminating bags full of no longer necessary papers. She found several rejection letters received years ago when she had sent out her not-quite-ready-for-publication first novel. Most were form letters, but one agent sent a personal note, commenting that the manuscript needed revision. He was right. Linda cut the story by more than 20,000 words, some of which she dearly loved. Letting them go met with more reluctance than she cares to admit, even now. Linda had resolved to write a more compelling book than the ones she was reading, a story that kept the reader turning pages despite a lack of sex and profanity. And she had indeed written a story, some 116,000 words of story. However, she hadn't committed to polishing that story into a marketable manuscript. But it was finished, you might say. Surely that took commitment. Yes, it did, but not enough. Linda knew that her ordinary story needed to be transformed into an extraordinary family drama. Today, the commitment that has its roots in that experience reaches far beyond her own writing. Every year, hundreds of thousands of writers thrust their creations into the marketplace. Because few have found homes in traditional publishing, the vast majority of their works are churned out by small presses and print-on-demand houses. This glut of reading material, some of it excellent, some of it poorly edited or unedited altogether, overwhelms even the most prolific readers and leaves many authors disillusioned about realizing their dreams of writing a bestseller. What's the commitment? Help writers to learn their craft. Don't just edit their manuscripts. Teach them to become better writers. Instruct them in the finer points of painting word pictures in a variety of colors and hues. Teach them the difference between show and tell. Take them down the path to writing great dialogue. Make a difference for those who, for whatever reason, choose to travel the non-traditional road. And in the process, give readers excellent stories that will keep them coming back for more. In this business, a number of areas beg for commitment. Which one beckons to you this year? For one of our colleagues, the late Helen Ginger, the area of commitment she aimed for was better organization and structure. Helen knew that she was the kind of person who worked best with structure and a checklist. She managed to put out a weekly newsletter for over 15 years, partly because it always came out on the same day each week. By the time Thursday rolled around, that newsletter had to be ready to go. She never had overdue bills because she paid the bills on the same day every week. Each day she made a list of things to get done, then marked them off as she completed them. She put a lot of thought into efficiency. Instead of doing one thing, could she combine multiple tasks, thus being more efficient? But despite all that, Helen still found herself spending way too many days doing other things and not doing any creative writing, other than the newsletter or the blog. There was housework, editing work, websites to maintain, the dog, a husband who thought he should eat every day, and so on and so on. Helen decided to bring her love of structure into absolutely everything she could. Instead of working on a list of resolutions, Helen brainstormed ways to organize herself. Just as she paid the bills every Tuesday, she set up a task for each day that should be completed. She listed things to do every day of the week, like write for an hour, exercise for 30 minutes, etc. She went even further and set specific time blocks for each of these tasks. It was not a vague decision to finish a rewrite of a book or to join a critique group, but a plan to get more writing done. Helen even figured out how to take the list and make it the wallpaper on her laptop. She needed to see it every day. This was Helen's 10-year plan. If she stopped following the plan, she would review the list and get back on the plan. Helen also gave herself rewards for following the plan each week. Guess what that was? An extra hour of reading. So, to recap, Linda Lane suggested making a commitment to a particular area of your writing business, and Helen Ginger gave us an example of how that commitment can be achieved by careful planning. Sadly, Helen Ginger passed away on April the 2nd, 2021, at the age of 68. Our wonderful readers so often have great advice of their own to share. Here's what some of them had to say in response to Linda and Helen's suggestions. Pim said, "I've also created a plan, blocked out on a week calendar for times when I will put aside for writing or reading or the many hobbies I've neglected, despite having plenty of time. So far, I'm finding it a little mentally exhausting. My hobbies, including writing, are not exactly relaxing and most take a lot of focus and creative energy. Going 4 or 5 hours at it, even when switching from writing to another thing like programming or learning a language, is taking some getting used to. Even so, it feels good to look at a plan and know that if I don't get things done, it won't be because I don't know what to do. I declare boredom extinct." Christine Glover wrote, "I'm actually pretty structured as well, but I have decided that this year I will allow for flexibility. Instead of letting the roadblock, life jarring event or whatever it is derail me, I have determined that I will just adjust my cap and move forward in a different way. If I have to write in a box, so be it." Catherine Kraft, "I'm with you. Organization will be key to achieving my goals, which include my editing, my own writing, and publication. Getting back to regular exercise now that I have access to a gym. Not to mention all my writing-related volunteer work. But it's all got to get done, and at a time of life when multitasking seems more challenging than ever. Maybe we can hold one another accountable." Laurie Kabatsili, "I read a very good post at another writer's blog where she says we must make very defined and obtainable writing goals, like I will write 1,000 words per day. I'm also quite organized, but I do lose a lot of time to the internet, my obsessions with email, Facebook, and blogging. So I'm limiting that. I'm blogging only on Sunday, 3 posts a week scheduled in advance. Only check other people's blogs after knock-off time." Mary Ann Miller, "I've tried valiantly every year to organize my totally unorganized approach to work and life to no avail. Just stumbled across a file I created last year, things to do, check every day. Not only did I not check it, I forgot I even had it. And it is funny how those husbands do expect to be fed every day." Patricia Stolte, "I write down my goals, I keep a running to-do list, and I maintain an online calendar with a reminder option. Even so, my writing life is clearly go with the flow. The only thing that keeps me on track is a deadline, even if it's self-inflicted." Meg, "You also have to be careful about over-organizing. If your life is too scheduled, you may unconsciously rebel against the lack of freedom in your daily life. I tend to do that randomly. A to-do list that is just one thing too long and I end up saying, screw it." Icy Sedgwick, "Like most writers, I've been resolving to write more, but I also adopted a resolution that I borrowed from an editor I know. I intend to read at least one novel a month. Reading is always good for kickstarting the motivation to write." Gwen Hernandez, "I created a daily plan that includes both daily goals and daily restrictions, like no Facebook until I meet my daily goal of 1,000 words. I also created a year of deadlines. Then I posted them on my blog and sent them to my CP. I still waste time when I'm avoiding a writing block or feeling sluggish, but my plan helps hold me accountable. Trisha Simpson. Whenever I make a to-do list, the first item is always write to-do list. That way I have something to cross off as soon as the list is written. It motivates me to keep going. My goal is to write in the mornings and edit something different in the evenings. I guess I'm creative in the morning and critical by night. Something that I started last year was to grocery shop on Friday and make up a week of dinners on Saturday morning. It takes about 3 hours, but then I just have to take a pan out of the freezer to thaw in the fridge overnight or stick the stuff from the freezer bag in the crock pot. Each evening, all I have to do is make a salad or cook a veggie. It has really simplified my life. That's all from us today. Thank you for joining me on the Blood Red Pencil podcast. This is Elle Carter-Neal signing off.